With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Racing Lanes probably with Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, everybody. We're broadcasting live from Milton, Ontario, Canada, and my co-host tonight is our resident legal brain, Henry or Hank Seaton. He's on the line with me, and we are going to have another guest tonight, but unfortunately, because of a family emergency, Margaret couldn't make it, and Hank just was gracious enough to fill in and take his regular time spot, which is tonight. There was an oversight between Rico and I, and Rico is not with us tonight. And Hank has brought a special guest on for our show. Hank, would you like to introduce our guest? And I'll get him on the line as well.
Sure. Is Rich on the line? Our special guest tonight is Rich Brenn. Rich is an insurance guru in the mold of Tommy Rook, who was on a couple of weeks ago. I've known Rich for, at least 10 to 15 years. He has broad experience in truck insurance with Great West Casualty, with the Lancer, and in the excess market. He can hopefully, I said that that he could sing a solo, but I would sing background on issues related to insurance, which is the one of the major issues facing new entrants and independent contractors. The market is very constricted, and Rick can speak to that, and we can talk about how you can best navigate the insurance issue. So that's going to kind of be our theme tonight, and if you've got questions concerning it after Rich gets introduced and maybe make some introductory comments, we'll open it up to questions.
Rich, are you there?
Yes, I am, sir. You guys hear me okay?
We certainly do.
Yeah, did you?
Good evening, and
you're
welcome to our show.
Remember all the accolades I gave you, Rich?
I love those accolades, Hank. You're being kind, saying we've only known each other 15 years, so we're both young guys.
Well, don't get no sense giving our age away, gentlemen. We look good in the pictures.
There you go.
Thank you for joining us tonight on such short notice. This is fantastic because, as a carrier and as a third-party broker, I can tell you that insurance for new entrants as well as existing entrants is getting tougher and tougher and tougher. And if this keeps up, there'll only be the big carriers that are self-insured around in 5 years. So hopefully there's some sort of sanity that is going to prevail up the road in the near future.
I can't disagree.
I'm not sure that sanity and underwriting goes together, but Rich, you can speak to what the marketplace is like now.
I appreciate it. The reality is underwriting is looking at and discriminating that which they believe to be a good versus a bad risk, and so You reference being a freight broker, and that's the same challenge that you face. Is this going to be a relationship that I know is going to deliver on time, good customer service, no problems? And that's essentially, what a truck underwriter is looking at is this company and is this person, these people behind the wheel, what kind of problems may develop in our relationship? So if everybody has a left hand, I can do you a real quick 6 points of underwriting so that you know what kind of discrimination is occurring when an underwriter looks at you to make a decision. If you got an index finger, that's the first finger that you hold up, and that's the direction where this thing's going to go. And that finger is the driver's. That's the first critical thing, and that's what tonight, you know, Hank said we can talk about. The analysis of the quality of the drivers, the pool of drivers, if it's one truck chuck, as we oftentimes say, what does his MVR look like? And how long has he been doing it? You know, what is there? It's kind of like their resume. Some people talk about a resume. That's the way a driver's MVR, motor vehicle record, is reviewed. And when there's a pool of them, how do they look in the aggregate? And what is the hiring standards and the practices? So that one person who's starting up, you know, I have seen insurance underwriters that are willing to accept, you know, that federal government pre-employment that can be pulled and look at their report to see what the roadside was. And there have been underwriters that have said to some of these new ventures, you show me that, right? I'm looking at your MVR, but prove to me that you haven't had roadside problems in the U.S. FMCSA registration system. I just throw that out because that's, if you're trying to build your case, if you're trying to market yourself as being a good quality driver, yeah, I drove for this fleet for 5 years. Look at my PSP, because they can pull their own PSP as they are their own employer. And so,
right,
you know, they can show up with their motor vehicle record in that. The second big factor is equipment. You know, that you never hold that second finger up alone. But it's the most outstanding thing. You know, it's what truck insurance agents look at when they're going down the road. Look at that big, beautiful, whatever brand is your preference, right? And that truck and that equipment and how all that's managed is the second factor. The third factor is, if you're married, where oftentimes people are wearing a wedding ring, you know, there's this concept that you've got a vein that runs from that to your heart, and that's why people wear their wedding ring there. But I'm talking about the heart of this operation. I'm talking about, what is this trucking company going to do? Where's it based? Where's it going to run? What's the kind of commodities that it's going to be doing? Is it going to be doing brokered loads, or is it going to be doing contracted loads? So it's the heart. Tell me the heart of this thing. Help me close my eyes and describe to me these trucks running around the country. And then the finger on the end, that's your pinky. And hopefully that pinky finger, it means that you're going to have little claims. You're going to have the least amount of problems in that loss area, because we're trying to eliminate, mitigate, reduce the potential of having any accidents. But you got to talk about them if they happened. And then you come back around your hand to your thumb, and you hold your thumb up, you know, thumbs up. That's what we want to be able to say. This company is managed well. It's a thumbs up management concept. And if underwriters are looking at an existing fleet that has bad roadside inspection, that thumb might not point up, right? It might get a thumbs down because they're seeing too much problems with unsafe drivers and vehicle maintenance issues. And maybe you told them that you're only operating in a 4-state region and they see inspections all over the nation. You know, so that's where underwriters have tools that you may not realize that are at their access, and they are doing a full bore review of all your federal data and other databases. So that's 5 points. And the sixth point, I don't have six fingers, but the sixth point is if you hold your hand open and put some money in your hand and then close it up, that's essentially what the underwriter's doing. They're saying, this is how much money I need from you to wrap these risk factors up and insure you. So that's, you know, that's a quick, maybe too long, but that's what underwriting looks like. And those are the points, whether we can go to any insurance company and where they deliberately go through that, but they got factors like that they're looking at, and that's what that app and that information, when you're given MVRs, you're given IFTA reports, you're given loss runs, that's what they're doing.
Interesting.
Rick, let me ask you a question. I might have two other missing fingers here. One would be, to what extent in terms of setting premiums, do they look at the nature of the operation and the states in which you operate?
That's a great question. And so insurance essentially is a social product. It is taking money from many to pay for the losses of a few. And so what they are doing, what the actuaries are doing, is they're looking at this group of trucks, and they're trying to, again, discriminate for those that have the reality. And, you know, part of it is propensity. I don't want to get too wrapped up in $6 words here, but, you know, an actuary is like trying to throw a dart 7 years into the future and be accurate. They are looking at the money collected today for losses that are going to transpire in this policy term in these next 12 months, and they're anticipating that they have enough money being charged for all of the vehicles and exposures that when all of the claims are done, they didn't lose money. And right now, the commercial auto marketplace has not been successful in the actuaries being able to stay ahead of loss development and other problems. So if it costs you a dollar to haul freight per mile, you know, you want a profit margin of 10 cents. So you got to charge at least $1.10, right? And I know these numbers are old, but the reason I use it is that a dollar is 100 pennies. And an insurance company is needing to balance their expenses of being in business plus their costs of claims. And out of that $1, they hope to keep a penny or two, just like a trucker hopes to keep a penny or two per mile. That's what the insurance underwriters want. If I can do that, 1 or 2 or 3, 5, 6, 7 cents, and if I do it 1 million times or 1 billion times, that's a bunch of money. But, you know, that's just like truckers running miles. If I can keep doing it, the challenge is, as I said, they are seeing $1.12 right now across the industry as their costs. So they write you for a dollar, and they just lost $1.12 in doing business with you. That's not a long-term model. So I'm sorry to say that's why things are getting tight as you are talking, it getting stringent, right? They're closing down on who they want to write. So their underwriting criteria is trying to find those people that aren't going to give them bad losses. And drivers oftentimes, as I said, it's the first criteria, and they get super wrapped up in that evaluation of drivers. And so if you in any way look like you're going to be a bad risk. Now, coming back to setting premiums, that long story to get back to his question, if you are operating in what is known as judicial hellholes, and Hank knows well what that means, if you go into parts of this country that are unfavorable, you're going to find it really difficult. And I know that we're probably across the nation here, and I'm not talking out of school, but Louisiana is a tough state to have a loss in, because you're in a different legal environment, and there's parts of New York, New York, true, and parts of Texas that come to mind. Hank knows where all these places are, but it's like you don't want to have a claim here, because that $1 million is going to be gone, and they might be coming after the rest of your assets too. So,
Rich,
At one point,
I remember years ago, California was horrendous, and I remember our insurance company was saying, at that point, just we'll insure you for California, but we don't want any more than one truck at a time in the state. Is it still that bad a state? Because a lot of produce comes out of there.
A lot of produce comes out of there, and California definitely, you know, there's two republics nation. One's California and one's Texas. And then you got all these other funky states too that are problematic. But, you know, I kind of understand what they're saying. I mean, the reality is whether you got one truck or 10 trucks in there, you know, where they're operating. And if they're trying to mitigate their potential for a loss, they're saying, well, you know, we shouldn't have more than one a day out there. If that's all
God forbid.
One thing that I think is particularly prejudiced to small carriers is the opportunity for nuclear judgments and the way that the court has played itself out over the past 10 or 15 years. If there is a bad accident, plaintiff's bar tries to troll up the supply chain to name other parties, i.e. brokers and shippers. Sometime before trial, the motor carrier must make a demand on the insurance company that says you basically have to pay policy limits or the burden of non-persuasion falls on the insurance company. When that demand is made on the insurance company, they get kind of white-knuckled and end up paying a whole lot more for a judgment than it's probably worth. But what they're afraid of is a runaway jury that'll come out with an incredible verdict, and then they'll be on the hook for it. So the $750 to $1 million worth of insurance that a small carrier has now, depending upon the nature of the wreck, you'll see the insurance company has to pay out that amount out of fear that a jury will come in with an excessive demand that they'll have to honor because of this burden of non-persuasion. And I think Rich can talk to that. But that's one reason that we're seeing the market contract, and we're seeing that the cost of insurance and retaining insurance is such a problem. One thing we might want to cover before we open it up to calls is the fact that the appetite for insurance companies seems to ebb and wane. And unfortunately, right now, making markets for small carriers are only a couple of insurers who are not necessarily longtime players or the most sophisticated parties. I don't know whether rich ones call names or not, but is that pretty much the case? And how should we advise somebody who has got a one truck tuck, one truck Chuck, or a two truck Charlie, to find insurance markets?
It's a great question, and I've got three notes here, so I won't belabor it too much, but I want to make sure I hit them all. To the last point you made, who can you trust, you know, and there's a lot of people all over the internet, and you probably got people calling you, and again, do you do business with someone that really gets it? And so Hank has been a contributor to it. I'm a member. He referenced Tommy Rook. We are a affiliation of people who are trying to stay fully aware and embracing truck insurance topics and consulting in the best manner that we can and bring you the best options that we can. If you find an agent, well, it's just like, do you want to go to an attorney that's staying current on his topics or a doctor that is? I mean, this is a truck insurance agent. If they are attending and going through the programs of the Motor Carrier Insurance Education Foundation and have obtained the TRS designation of Transportation Risk Specialist, that means that at least they've taken tests and they've tried to learn this industry and network inside of it. And last year we had almost 500 people, over 400 people attending a conference in Orlando who are truck insurance geeks. That's what I call myself. If you look me up on LinkedIn, and that's what you're going to see. I'm self-proclaimed. I love trucks. I like the insurance industry. I like to get into these topics with guys like Hank and try to find answers. So find a competent, qualified agent. There are respectable long-term markets. You know, I won't name any names here on the horn, but one of the things that every insurance consumer should know is the financial strength, and there is a third-party rating service called AM Best. And if you look at your freight broker agreements, oftentimes they say it's got to be a A-rated or at least a B-plus rated AM Best. That's just about financial integrity. So you can find out at least who that company is, and is it in a positive or a negative? Is it, you know, A's always meant something good when I was in school. I think they use different ratings today. But, you know, my parents made it clear to me what I bring home.
Rich, we have a caller here, Ben. I'm going to try to patch him in here, okay?
Go for it.
Give me a sec here.
Yep.
Hello, Ben.
Yes, sir.
Ben, you're on with Hank Seaton and Rich and Chuck Snow. How are you this evening?
Good. How are you?
Good. And what is your question?
I have a problem with the fascist ideas represented on the show and KKK supporting.
Okay, next. I don't know what that was all about.
That was interesting.
While we've got Ben cut off, let me make one observation to kind of tag team what Rick said. Over my career, I have had lawsuits against insurance agents who said that they were truck insurers, but the only truck policy they ever wrote was for a garbage man in New Jersey. If you think that you've got to shop for insurance and that the hometown agent who writes car insurance is your first stop, you got another thing coming. It is a specialty, just like needing a real estate agent. Just because somebody has a real estate license doesn't mean they're going to help you with commercial property. It is something in which you need to get someone who is knowledgeable. Another thing is, it is a typical insurance agent trick to say, I will go and survey the market for you. And then you find out that he's got one favored insurer. It's probably not a bad idea to shop your insurance. This may be true for larger carriers, but I have seen agents that wanted an exclusive. And sometimes that doesn't leave all the stones unturned. What is your take on that, Rich?
Well, I've sold it, right? So I've sat there across the table, and it's about trust and relationship, and is that person really doing it for you? And a qualified, competent person who understands it, when I have a full suite, you know, when I was a full-blown truck insurance agent and had knowledge of the market, I could tell you about every market. And if somebody said that they're going to quote me with such and such a market, I would say, let them. I wouldn't take you there. You know, they've embarrassed me, and I know the problems with them. And so if you take that quote, let's go through it. I suggest to you that we go to this market and this market and this market if you want me to shop you. I do believe personally in longevity and relationship. You know, as a truck insurance agent, I would say, I want to be your last agent, meaning I want a lifetime relationship. I want to build that, and keeping your insurance in a place over time, should you have a bad loss, then you are praying that they respect that relationship, right? And that they don't cancel you, non-renew you, get away from you. So these are the things that you need to keep in mind. I mean, I'm a consumer too. I fully respect obtaining a good value. And that's the hard part when it comes to it. Do you really know? Insurance is a promise. You promise to tell me the truth about your operations. They promise to pay your claims based on the premiums charged. And that's what you're going to find out. That's when the real crux of the matter hits, right? And you find out that your agent failed to do this, that, or the other thing, and that insurance company isn't responding. You know, one of the first things that's critical when I'm looking at a new market is I got to know how they're dealing with claims. And if a company is not getting ahead on a claim, that can get so expensive, and those losses go to your loss history. And I have, through my networking through the years, I have found companies outside of insurance companies that are specialists in controlling towing problems and towing costs. And so I try to introduce those to my underwriters that I'm doing business with. I know people that are not employed by the insurance companies that really know how to get on that scene and investigate it and find out quickly what the damages, the injuries are about, you know, because these people are going to hook up with an attorney on the plaintiff's side, and the next thing you know, they're, you know, they've got all kinds of medicals wrapped up, and they're just using that as multipliers to get a judgment out of you, a settlement. So these are the ploys that – go ahead.
Yeah, I just you made me want to interrupt for this this piece of advice. With respect to auto liability, the coverage is pretty well established by a federal filing, and by and large, all underwriters have equal zeal, I guess, to pursue BI and PD claims. That's bodily injury and property damage. Remember, cargo is a completely different issue. If you think you're going to buy cargo on price without looking at the policy and the claims handling system of the insurer, you're making a key mistake. I've had situations in which agents have sold policies to flatbed carriers that didn't include wetness, dampness, and moisture. Situations in which cargo policies are sold to refrigerated carriers that have refrigeration exclusions. Policies that have theft exclusion. So particularly with that respect, if you're in charge for buying the cargo policy, you need not to just look at the lowest price to get it moved, because one major offset for a small carrier of a cargo claim, particularly if he's factoring his receivables, can put him immediately out of business. So that's my soapbox for the night. Rich, take it away.
Amen, Hank. And again, as an agent trying to protect the customer and giving him options, I can remember talking to a guy who had some cargo claim problems. We were bringing him solutions. One was $10,000 less than the other. That was an easy decision for him. You know, I want the cheaper one. Well, here's the deal. You can never leave your load unattended. He was hauling motorcycles, and you do not have terminal coverage, so don't bring them to your lot and leave them. What did he do? Left a load in the lot on a weekend, and what happened? It got stolen. There was no coverage. Now, we had warned him. We had signed off on it. He was mad and cussing me out, and yet we had gone through it. And we had explained to him, this is the kind of loss that's not going to be covered. So he went to save $10,000, and it ended up costing him $65,000 because he lost that load of motorcycles. I'm gonna come back around and on that same topic, Hank. I agree. You know, you want somebody that's going to get out there and beat that liability down and protect you from too high of settlement costs and get them done. The cargo is incredibly important. Keeping your shippers happy. And not just throwing away the cargo and trying to mitigate it. Same thing with your vehicle, the comp and collision on that. You know, that's your tool. You need that thing fixed right and promptly. And so are they on top of it or not? So I'm going to come back around. You had asked me what to watch for in insurance companies, and I'm not here to badmouth a company. There is traditional insurance, great big fleets, as you oftentimes refer to them. Great big fleets are self-insured. Yeah, they are. They're taking the first $1 million or $2 million, right? They are retaining the risk. And there are alternatives out there today called risk retention groups, which –
Is that
again,
the same as a captive?
A captive is a means for an RRG. They're all alternative ways to finance – losses. I'll just say it that way. An insurance company takes premium, pays losses. A mutual company means that we are all the owners of it. You know, most companies are stock, meaning somebody on the New York Stock Exchange. Mutuals are owned by the companies. If you're from the Midwest and never had a mutual homeowners type coverage, it's a different design. These are captives have to be funded by someone, and usually it's the member. It can be a great big enterprise that has their own insurance company. It's a micro insurance company. It's just managed in the eyes of the Department of Insurance differently. A risk retention group is a federal allowed program in the U.S. government. Insurance is managed on a state-by-state basis, state departments of insurance. But this is a federal program that you can establish to allow you to get liability coverage. So when medical malpractice, for example, was difficult to get, the doctors had to form a risk retention group and kind of fund their own thing. And RRGs do exist in the trucking world. There are a lot of them out there. I'm not going to say that they are bad people because I don't believe they are. But because of some bad ones, the industry has developed a unfair perspective for all, right? You know, the sins of a few have tarnished everybody's reputation. And I understand it. I have read a letter from the Uniform Intermodal Interchange Association that they will not accept insurance from an RRG because of problems that they've had with claims. So,
right.
Hank brought up, watch out for your cargo. There are these gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen from London called the Lloyds of London who have a bad reputation.
Oh, yes.
And I'll be honest with you, you can have an absolutely fantastic cargo form from Lloyd's of London, or you can have that one that you just said, oh, yes, that's a problem. And Chuck, you're right. Chuck, you're right. I can put London
on
two
this.
Different risks and
says,
have
oh,
great coverage.
If anybody says, oh, it's underwritten by Lloyd's of London, realize that is not one individual or one company. That can be any one of a number of different syndicates. And some of the syndicates have what's called a TPA, and some of those TPAs exist only to deny the claim. So I'm not trying to have a broad brush and say that everything that says Lloyd's of London is bad, but don't be snookered by the name. There are different policies out there.
I rode a specialized auto transporter, and the only way that I could get them $2 million worth of cargo limit was through Lloyd's of London. And I had an absolutely fantastic coverage form that was able to provide the coverage on specialized vehicles. You can't find that everywhere, you know. And we had an awesome claims administrator out of Omaha, Nebraska, and he knew how to take care of things. I mean, we literally had to send a – when I say prototype car, how many am I talking about? That one, right? That
right.
one. We had a claim with that one, and ooh. we had to send it back to Korea to get it fixed. But that was a specialized claims handler that knew what he was doing, and hats off to him in London for covering a bad day. So. I know I'm running around a lot of places here. One of the things, I'm going to go back to Hank setting premiums. You know what you do, you know, the driver and where you're operating, but you know the stuff you're hauling is critical too. And this is one of those things that sometimes people get themselves into trouble because they don't think it's a problem. And I'll just say this real simply: if you are just setting up to register with the FMCSA, and you look at that list of commodities and you say, well, yeah, I might do that, and you go crazy checking off a bunch of boxes, you can put yourself into a slight problem that you don't want to have. You know, if you know all you're going to haul is dry goods and nothing even refrigerated, let's say, and you're not going to run flatbeds, you're going to just run vans, chances are you're not going to run into anything. You know, don't put on there that you're going to haul chemicals, right? don't put on there that you're going to haul equipment, because in that registration process, equipment means that there's a combustible engine sometimes in these items, and you become classified as a miscellaneous hazmat carrier. And your insurance requirement is only $1 million versus $750. It's not taking you up to $5 million. But why did you do that to yourself? Is my question. And in the reverse of that, if you are hauling cars and you are hauling backhoes, you know, and you are hauling tanks that are maybe they're empty, but they were fuel tanks. Now you're still involved in miscellaneous hazmat, so those boxes should have been checked, and you should be registered to do $1 million, because the inspectors on your property drinking your coffee and looking at your files might bring that to your attention and say you're not properly registered.
Let me ask you a question here. Rich, for our listeners, we're going to be getting into the season very shortly where a lot of our listeners are going to be hauling lawn equipment, lawnmowers and things, and there's a combustible engine that comes out of the factory. Is that a risk at all?
That is you gave me a great lead there. I use that example all the time. You could be hauling brand new chainsaws and lawnmowers that just came out of the factory. Because it's a combustible engine, it's still believed to have exposure to pollutants. And so the cargo, essentially, is what they believe to be the cargo, the pollutant exposure, because oil and residues. So when a truck goes over, this is something to keep in mind regarding cargo. When a truck is in an accident and the radiator is spilling all over the place and you got some diesel fuel running, right, you've got fluids that just came out of that vehicle. You busted an axle and you got grease. Well, those are pollutants. And your policy has basic coverage for those kinds of fluids that are inherent to that tractor, that truck. However, if your cargo fell out and happened to be diesel fuel, or, you know, happened to be ammonia gases, you know, now you got all kinds of different problems, don't you? And now, does my insurance policy provide me pollution coverage for my cargo? And so if by chance, you know, your cargo could turn out to be a pollutant, and people don't think milk is a pollutant, but don't put it in a stream because fish don't swim in it very well, and it becomes a pollutant that needs to be cleaned up in a
yeah,
federal...
let me interject here one more problem. most people who are going to be a small carrier going one way or another have to sign a written contract, and you are going to have one hell of a time being acceptable unless you have $1 million in BI and PD. Now, there is a requirement that says you've got to have a minimum of $750, but let me tell you where the million comes in. The million covers what we would call light hazardous, and for a commercial motor vehicle, that's any quantity of a hazardous material. It doesn't have to be placarded. It can be something, I think it's called ORMD, and you can pick up hairspray, and on the bottom of the box it'll say ORMD. I've got people who say that shaving cream is ORMD. So just general freight that you can be asked to haul can theoretically be light hazardous and require $1 million. So, you know, I guess my take home from that is, unless you're just going to haul pumpkins, you better go ahead and plan on buying $1 million worth of coverage. So, A, you can get access to freight, and B, you'll have the coverage that you require if you're hauling ordinary general commodities, because otherwise that stuff you got on the truck may be a hazardous material. Unless you read the bottom of the box, you don't know it.
I agree 100%.
Totally agree. There seems to be a cap almost with new carriers now
just starting out in the U.S., where they're only able to get $1 million coverage.
Again, Chuck, I'm going to suggest that if we look at their registration and what the commodities that they said they were doing, that's probably how that happened to them. So
my understanding is it's difficult to buy that, if not impossible, to buy those $2, $3, $4, $5 million policies for a brand new carrier.
Oh, no,
It's expensive if you can find it.
It's a foregone conclusion. And, you know, one of the real squeeze on the broker is he gets a contract from Mr. Shipper that says he can only hire carriers who have $2 or $3 million worth of insurance. And that just guts him from using 85 or 90% of the carriers he has under contract, because $1 million is really the standard in the spot market, I believe. I don't know, Chuck, you're a broker. Don't you have to micromanage an account if you've got some shipper who's insisting on $2 or $3 million?
Oh yeah, and we have some that, you know, there's customers out there that that insist on more, and some that insist on less. But we have to watch that like a hawk, and we also have to make sure that insurance is valid. You know, there was a scam at one time, and we learned our lesson. Luckily, we caught it. Nothing happened, where we had motor carriers at one point getting insurance and then canceling it. And this was years ago, and these people were running around without insurance.
Well,
this is 30 years ago, so we learned our lesson very quickly.
Well, that hadn't changed. The FMCSA website will, for an interstate carrier, show whether or not he's got $750 or $1 million. It isn't going to show if he's got $2 or $3 million. The shipper will ask you to present is a certificate of insurance, which is an absolutely worthless piece of crap, because it isn't really evidence that any particular unit is covered, and the best the broker or the shipper can do is be named an additional insured, which means somebody will give him notice if he's canceled. So there's a real vetting issue of trying to affirm that this carrier is licensed, authorized, and insured, and that's why there are people like RMIS and management companies that stay on top of the FMCSA's website to notify shippers and brokers when insurance is canceled. One of the issues that I think we ought to talk about, particularly for small and new carriers, is if you get with an insurer who gets up one morning and sees that you've had a bad inspection and decides he wants to cancel you, you're 30 days from being out of business. The very fact that he canceled you means that you're going to have difficulty finding anybody else. And when that 30th day comes after he sends a notice to the FMCSA, it's like being at the racetrack and the window closing. Because at that point, your shippers are notified and you're out of the shrine. I've had that happen with carriers running 200 or 300 trucks because of FUBARs, and at the last minute they could not get other insurance. So that's another good reason if you are a newly created company, to be sure you stay on top of the underwriter. If you have a blip, you explain it. You get an agent who can intercede for you, because cancellation of new carriers insurance is a systemic problem. You think that's
a
fair statement, Rich?
I agree. I mean, there are some that react more severely and quicker than others.
I have a question, gentlemen. When you sign an insurance contract with an insurance provider, and you've agreed to pay whatever it is, you know, $14,000 a year, whatever it is for the year for that truck, is it not a 1-year contract where they have to honor it for the 12 months, or they can actually just cancel you midterm?
there are conditions inside the policy that if there is a significant change of risk, and this goes back to state laws, some states are more conservative and others are more liberal, but if an underwriter says, hey, Chuck, these are the drivers that you told me that you're going to be running, and we're having driver claims with guys that we don't know about, and these guys seem to have 9 months worth of, well, take that back, 9 days worth of driving experience.
Okay.
Right? You changed the risk that we took. And so in that case, I'm not stating fraud transpired, but, you know, something's different, right? We thought we were getting a bunch of 42-year-old guys driving Peterbilts hauling, you know, dry goods. And we just rolled a diesel freight liner, you know, in Missouri. What are you guys doing down there? You know, pulling diesel. So those are the problems that, and I don't want to make anybody scared or paranoid, but there are tools now. I mean, technology allows an underwriter to watch what goes on, and your underwriter can get alerted if your SMS score is heating up in any one area, if you're on the increase, if you fail to report, you had a DOT recordable. You know what? Right. I just jackknifed and I went in the ditch and I took care of it myself. I had it pulled out. Well, you got towed, right? That's a DOT recordable. And right. If your underwriter sees that show up and they didn't have any record of it in their system, they're going to say, what are you doing? Not reporting your claims. So, I mean, I'm sorry that there's that much oversight, but when they're losing money on the dollar, they're doing everything they can to get out of these problems.
I agree. They are your partner, and you need to treat them with respect. And I think people that lie to their insurance companies are fools. You know, tell them what your policy is. Tell them the truth, because they're going to find out the truth anyways. You know, and if you've got a hiring policy that allows you to hire new drivers, well, then tell them, because they're going to find out about it quick enough.
Well, to that end, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I was a kid in South Dakota driving a truck at 14 years old, right? But I had a farmer that told me, here's what you're going to do, and you're not going to crash my truck. You know, what is the finishing program, right? What is the oversight? You got all kinds of technology and tools available. You got all kinds of great drivers that can be trainers. And so I've gone to bat for truckers that say, look, I want to put this guy on. Here's what I've done to verify that he's qualified. You know, this is what I'm going to do to team him for X number of whatever time period. We're going to finish him out, right? And then we're going to watch him. We're going to watch him like a hawk. If you're really committed to doing that, you are helping, right? You are managing the risk, and that's a great testimony to say, I'm not just letting him go out there and bash my equipment up. You know, there's a guy in South Dakota, Bernie Feldhaus. I can remember him, 5-unit bull hauler out of South Dakota. And I saw him at an event one time, and he got talking about, yeah, my driver was going through Ipswich, and the cop pulled him over and told him to slow down. And that cop called me up, and I took that driver to the side, and I said, my name's on the side of that truck, and you won't drive fast through Ipswich. You know, it's master the ship, you know, in an appropriate manner.
It is. You know, it is. And you know, I've been questioned here on my fleet where a driver got written up a couple years ago for being over hours on his logbook. And the insurance, when they come in once a year and they do their interview, the fellow that does the auditing said, what story on this driver that was over? And I said, he was fired when he got back. And that, you know, that went a long way because they saw that I meant business.
Well,
and when
Chuck,
I'm interviewing a driver,
point.
I tell them point blank, this is our rule.
Yep.
Don't go over the hours of service, or you know what? You're fired. It's real easy.
Well, and this is where some underwriters look at driver turnover. Oh, you got too high driver turnover. No, that was intentional, because we don't tolerate problems here. You know? And so, you know, It's great to say we never have a problem with any of our drivers. Wouldn't that be wonderful, right? That everybody.
Well, when you have autonomous trucks, that'll happen, I guess.
That's when other people are going to run into them.
Rich, one other thing that we mentioned earlier, and that
you have to speak up, Hank. We can barely hear you.
Yeah, I said one other thing that we mentioned earlier was that the underwriters look at the solvency and the ability of the insured to pay, particularly important with respect to new and small carriers. You want to tell them a little bit about CAB and the kinds of things that insurers track?
Yep. So the Central Analysis Bureau has been around a long time, going way back to the ICC, and that's where they were involved in looking at the financials back in the days, right, when people had to report their financials and they were actually controlling lanes, right? In CAB, Central Analysis Bureau continues to provide to certain underwriters a financial analysis. And so if you've ever had an underwriter ask for financials, some of them are submitting them there for a review. Some of them do it internally. You know, it's not unusual. Don't be paranoid that they ask you about revenue, because they're trying to figure out what is your miles to your revenues and does that match? You know, are you an LTL operation? You're going to get more revenue per mile versus, you know, a hay hauler, let's say, in the Midwest. So those are questions that people get uptight about. But CAB is one of the tools, and I'll put a plug in. There's another guy named Craig Lack with Carrier Software. These people are providers of data, and they can help freight brokers to likewise analyze their prospective truckers. They can help trucking companies to do safety profiles and driver scorecards. There's all kinds of tools out there, but I'm letting you know these people have the data and they put it together, and you can use it to manage your own fleet, or an underwriter's looking at these things, and that's what Hank alluded to. I can pull a report on any MCDOT, and I get a bunch of graphs that have red, yellow, and green on them. And if you know anything about the way, you know, control lights work, red's not a good thing. And so when your report's bleeding all over the place, that one looks a little hot, doesn't it? You know, and so they are showing the trends. They are showing the trends over time on your unsafe and on your hours of service and on your vehicle maintenance, on every one of those things. And they are even pulling, you don't necessarily know it, but they're recording your cargo. And so you tell me that you're a non-hazardous carrier, but when I look at your bill of lading list that's at the end of this report and I see BP and Sunoco and Exxon, I'm going to say, what are you hauling, empty cans for these guys? I mean, how do you haul for big oil?
Exactly.
And
I got to put you, you know, Rich, we got a gentleman, Bruce, is calling in. Let's hope he's a lot better than the last caller. Let's try him on. Bruce, are you there?
Yes, I am, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure. How can we help you?
You were talking a little earlier about being able to, I mean, insurance companies finding out what drivers have been doing, and it's best to be honest. Well, I had an incident happen a number of years ago where I got a call from the Kansas Highway Patrol, and he wanted to know why I had a hit-and-run accident around Wichita that I never reported. And I said, well, sir, I haven't had a hit-and-run accident. And he says, well, were you driving a certain kind of truck and a certain kind of trailer at a certain time on a certain day? And I said, yeah, I probably was. And because I was, at that time, I was making round trips from a small country elevator during wheat harvest to a terminal elevator in Wichita. And he said, well, we had a report that a rock blew off of your tire and broke the side window of a Chevy Tahoe. And I said, okay, I kind of questioned that happened. But anyway, after a few minutes of kind of wondering what was going on, he admitted to me that this young man showed up at their office with the side window of a Chevy Tahoe that was completely shattered. And he said, it looks to me like this guy had to come up with a story to explain to his parents why their Chevy Tahoe had the side window knocked out. And he probably had been in a part of town where he wasn't supposed to be, and someone put a crowbar through the side of his Tahoe, and this was his way of trying to cover.
Yep.
Well,
you know
my
what?
Insurance
had, go ahead, Bruce.
My insurance had just renewed a month or so prior to this, and by the time it rolled around for renewal 11 months later, I'd completely forgot about it. But my insurance company called me and said, why did you not report this accident to us? And I go, oh, you mean the one where I was supposedly in Wichita area and a rock threw off my truck and broke the window? They go, yeah. And then my insurance agent started chuckling. He says, we've had a rash of them this year where people are using trucker insurance as a way to try to, cover for kids doing, behavior that they're not
right.
supposed to be doing. And so, but I'm just, the point was, is that you can run, but you can't hide. And I didn't try to hide anything, but I still got found, Now, granted, it didn't affect me because there was no claim paid out or anything, but it was on my driver's license record for 3 years until it finally went off.
Oh, that's too bad.
And so
that's a great record.
That,
go ahead.
One of the things that's really troubling to me is traditionally underwriters looked at loss runs to predict premiums, and loss runs are fairly mature claims. Rick mentioned all of the CAB and the red light, green light that's on the CSA scores. The caller just gave an example that I see all too frequently, which is things that show up in the SMS methodology are just allegations. They're not proven fact. I think Rich for a while was working with Lancer Insurance Company. They canceled a poor bus guy because they said he was involved in a fatality accident, but we had the front-facing camera that showed that the fatality accident was caused across the four-lane, and his involvement was just when the axle from the demolished car hit his front bumper. And but for that, that bus company would have been put out of business. So I think that there really is an issue of watching your SMS scores and particularly offering a defense to your underwriter before he accepts anything that shows up as valid. And that may just be the lawyer in me, but I see a whole lot of abuses in that SMS system, and it behooves you to watch what's reported and to contest particularly contestable violations, because you will pay for it in your insurance.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And back to Bruce's point, I mean, I had a trucker. I'm down in Phoenix, and I had one of my customers, get accused of doing something, and they're describing the truck. And all they did is they had driven through the yard, and they grabbed this truck, and the actual number of the trailer, they didn't do a good job of matching it up. That trailer was in another state, and that truck was in a different state at the time that this supposedly happened. So they waited a few days, and when those two were blended together, it was like, well, you saw that on Wednesday, but on Monday when this supposedly happened, the blonde driver that you said was in that truck, who, by the way, is actually a Hispanic driver, was not in Phoenix. Today,
gentlemen, unfortunately, we're getting close to the end of the show, and I want to give our listeners an opportunity to be able to reach out to either and both of you gentlemen should they have any questions. Rich, thank you so much. Would you mind giving our listeners some contact information?
I would be glad to. I'm first going to promote again our truck insurance group. The Educational Foundation will soon have a portal that motor carriers can go to and get information. So the kind of things that we are putting out there and some webinars that they could attend will be at mcief.org for Motor Carrier Insurance Education Foundation.org, mcief.org. Rich Bren, I'll give you my work email, RBREN, B as in boy, RBREN at P as in Paul, F as in Frank, A as in Adam, PFA, Protex, all together, Protex, PROTECTS.com. We're a specialty provider of surety to freight brokers. We do some coverage for them, and we're building out our truck insurance offerings. If I can't help you, I'd be glad to help find a friend for you. And then I'll give you my cell. That's always my easiest. I'll give you my cell, 623-680-7460.
Thank you. We're going to have to say goodnight to everybody because it's coming to an end. I didn't have time to give you my contact information. Stay safe, everybody, and we'll catch you on the flip-flop. See you next week. Be safe. Thank you both. Have a good evening, gentlemen. Thank you again. Great show. Bye now.
Thank you.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.